Are you looking for the best news in talk radio in Pensacola? Then tune in to News Radio Pensacola. We're your source for the latest news, weather, and traffic, as well as in-depth interviews with local and national leaders. We also have the best talk radio lineup in town, with hosts that are passionate about the issues that matter to you. So whether you're looking to stay informed or just want to hear some great conversation, News Radio Pensacola is the place for you. News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable. Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Going out there, they're you know, in having those conversations, they're extremely excited that the university is taking a posture of being more outward facing, of being more aggressive, and again to stretch and say, why not UWF, right? And it, why is it all these other schools? Why not UWF? Why don't we continue to have a presence? Why don't we push that presence, and then why don't we create a buzz?
This is now President-elect Manny Diaz, no longer interim president. He still has to be confirmed by the Board of Governors, talking about his picture of the future for UWF. And this is back in the December Board of Trustees meeting. Basically, you know, he wants UWF to be growing. He wants it to be more outward-facing. He wants it to be, you know, hey, the kind of school that people pick instead of other schools, as opposed to being the school that people pick when they don't get into other schools.
My job is to continue to stretch. Right. Because, you know, the provost got us to number three, but we're not going to sit here and be satisfied and say, hey, let's just be number three again. Right. Regardless of the obstacles that we would face against other institutions, I think our goal is going to continue to push to try to be number one. Right. We're always going to try to improve and push.
So number one is Florida and FSU is number two. So that would, you know, we were number three. And again, the metrics benefit you if you are, they reward you if you are growing in any of the metrics and improving, not necessarily whether you have objective scores. So UWF was able to be competitive because we are improving and in some cases have objective scores. I mean, don't get me wrong. We did very, very well. But as you get to be in a objectively good situation on the metrics, it becomes harder and harder to, you know, keep a high score. It's designed to reward you for improvement and also objective status. Being number one or number two would be very challenging for us, but not impossible. But clearly, he wants to see something more for UWF than historically what it has been in the metrics, in the prestige, in the size of the population on campus.
Just coming off a 2-day trip to the Capitol and committee weeks, I think, again, this is no knock on everybody. Everybody has, anybody, people have their style and their vision and what they think is the best for the institution. And institutions also have phases in the life of the institution, right? And I think we're at the precipice of incredible growth. Not only growth, we're seeing an enrollment, right? Up to 15.5, 15.6, looking to be 16,000. You look back at the traditional enrollment at this institution, it's way lower than that. So growth is happening here, right?
Yeah, and enrollment growth is happening already. He was saying he thinks expects this year or next year to get up to 16.2. The question in my mind as I was listening to him talk about this is, what is his end goal? You know, what is his big goal? You know, does he want UWF to be 16 or 17,000 and more selective with its admissions because we can afford to be? Or does he have in mind the idea of us becoming, you know, a Florida State contender? You know, because you have university, I mean, like, I think USF is at like 50, UCF is like 70,000 people. You know, does he envision UWF to be in that same category, top end, you know, Division I sports, but competitive athletically or academically with anybody, you know, in the state or in the nation even? And he didn't say. I did ask him, you know, what his goal was, and he said he thinks that maybe somewhere in the 16,000, you know, is kind of good because then you can be more selective with your admissions. And that raises, by the way, another question. And this is kind of the question I want you to be thinking about this morning as we're talking about this. Feel free to text me. Is, what do you want for UWF? I mean, it's your school. What do you want? Do you want a school that historically has been I've lived here, you know, we're here now 12 years, okay? 12 years this month. So my perception of UWF when I came here was it was the next place you went after community college. It was a good school. It was not a great school in terms of reputation or academics. It was not the kind of place that people from other states would come to go to particularly, unless maybe they are on a scholarship for athletics, and we recruited them as a Division II school. It's a school that accepts something like 60% of the people who go there, so it's a safety school is what we used to call it when I was growing up, which is, you know, if you did well enough in high school, you almost certainly could get in. You know, places like FSU and Florida are more in the, like, you know, I think 20-25% maybe acceptance rate. You know, so they're a lot more selective. Do you want a school that, say, is more of a 30% acceptance rate and you don't know for sure that your kids can go there? Do you want a school that grows to, you know, not just 16,000, but 20, 25,000, 30,000? Dramatically changes its nature in that way, stops being the small private school kind of feel that UWF sometimes has as a state school, and has the ability to recruit better teachers, more grant money, bigger prestige, more on-campus housing, more on-campus activities, restaurants, maybe bars, you know, more stuff to do on, you know, with a stadium that's coming. Do you want that future? Or does that kind of, you know, challenge what you take for granted about UWF, that it's a very good, local, inexpensive school that you know for sure your kids, if they're interested in going to college, can get into? And I mean, I ask that sincerely, like, which way do you want us to go? Because you can't have both. And Manny is clearly committed, not so much, I won't say he's clearly committed to the growth size-wise, but he is clearly committed to going and getting money, getting grants, getting funding, getting donations from businesses, growing the on-campus presence in terms of the dorms, growing the on-campus visuals in terms of improving the Cannon Green, growing activities and retail opportunities, you know, renovating the union. Like, I mean, all of that stuff he is definitely interested in. And he says, look, we've had a habit of kind of being this sleepy little school that is fine being what it is. And he wants it to be more. And he thinks he can do that in Tallahassee. He'll be the most present president in Tallahassee. He has a lot of good relationships from his time in the Senate, from his time as being the, you know, the education secretary. He's got a lot of connections and a lot of pull, a lot of influence. He knows how to work that system. If you want the university to grow, he's your guy. You know, if you're interested in a university having more prestige, more renown, better ability to attract and recruit, and increasing, he makes all the sense in the world. That's not the same as saying he's the guy to make the you know, the academic spectacular or to have better on-campus organization. But if you want if you want his vision, then he's the guy. Which, that's kind of what they were talking about.
Being at their door, sitting with them, and having those conversations. And fortunately, I'm blessed with relationships that I carry over from not only being in the legislature, but spending 3 years as commissioner, where a lot of those legislators relied on me for help whenever it came to something having to do with schools, right?
So they know him, he'll be there, he'll fight through the whole process before things happen, anticipating them budget-wise, at the end when it's a mad scramble for the leftover dollars. And he says, look, it's really simple.
Our efforts are going to be very targeted, very strategic, and relationship-based. And so you don't see Alex Smith here today because he's off in, at the Capitol working his tail off. The reason that he has to be there is because the way that that process works is you either have a seat at the table, right, for dinner, or you're on the menu.
And I mean, he's not wrong. When it comes to funding from the state, when it comes to understanding that process and working at Alex, who used to work for D.C., in the mayor's office in Pensacola, is now working for UWF for Manny, and Alex is very, very capable as a lobbyist. So he says, look, it's building relationships, it's being known, it's being seen, it's raising the awareness of, you know, state legislators that UWF is not just this kind of little old school that's plodding along doing its thing in West Florida, but it is a player statewide and nationwide.
Has not been the case before, just by relationship, just by the nature of, again, sometimes having an attitude of saying, we're a great little school over here at the end of the panhandle, and we just don't want anybody to pay attention. That's great. Chug along. But then when you go ask for money, not so great, right? So we have to continue. It goes along with the same theme. We have to push out into the community, but we have to be present over there.
And he recognizes that that kind of growth is going to come possibly at a cost to the identity of UWF. Some would say certainly at a cost to the identity. And he's concerned about that because he knows that one of the reasons, you know, I'm a UWF parent. I have two kids who one went and one is going, and the other one is, it's, you know, into nursing. So he'll probably go to PSC, but, you know, it could be either way kind of thing. So, you know, we like UWF. We think UWF is a great school and a wonderful school for being, you know, so locally available. They all commuted. They don't even live on campus. That's another aspect of UWF that, you know, you kind of take for granted that it's mostly a commuter school. If it grows, you could certainly, I mean, if you are bringing people from elsewhere and you raise selectivity, and if you also raise numbers, it's going to stop being a commuter school, not a primarily a commuter school. You know, it's going to change its nature.
You lay that over the opportunity for students and you hear them say that. And as you walk around, you see it where students get to come to a Florida public university, but they get the attention and the setting of a private institution. And so I think that's unique in our system.
Yeah, it definitely is. And he says, look, I want us to be a first choice. I don't want us to be a backup. I want us to be the place that people deliberately come. And that means building on our strengths, the things that we do well that nobody else does, the, you know, maritime archaeology, the cyber. You know, there are things that we do here that nobody else does by comparison or not nearly as well. Building the campus, again, developing restaurants and activities for students to do. He specifically compared us to UCF and USF in this category. And, you know, he was specifically asked the question, this again, back in December. I have the clips from yesterday's meeting for later on in the show. This is kind of set up. He didn't change. I mean, he's giving the same answers. That's why I'm kind of playing these for you now. But he was specifically asked by one of the audience members.
You mentioned that one of UWF's greatest assets is the ability to give the students a private school experience. How do you expect to continue if you're focused on growth? And then also, how much growth do you see as acceptable to be able to continue to offer that excellent service?
Yeah, that is a great question. That's the, where do you see us being numbers-wise in order to preserve the identity that we've always had?
I think that's a great question. And hopefully we have a new Argo in your household. So I would tell you that growth for the sake of growth is not the way to go. I mean, we're talking about responsible growth. And that responsible growth requires a leadership and a vision that takes not only into account what our class sizes are going to be and the ability to have quality faculty in front of every student. It also requires the physical facility to meet the requirements of that enrollment.
Yeah, and he specifically said,
so while I see us growing from 15,600 probably to close to 16,000 in the next year, the growth beyond that probably slows down a little bit, and you're probably looking at 16,200. So I think that's kind of the sweet spot for UWF.
And so, you know, again, he doesn't want it to lose its identity. He doesn't want it to become so big that it loses who it is, what it is. But he definitely wants to grow it, improve it, both in awareness and in selectivity. You know, look, if you make people want to come here and you improve the quality of the facilities, if you make it a more attractive place academically, athletically, and all of that, you're going to get more applications. And if you can only capacity 16 grand, that means you're going to say no to more people. So that 60% drops to 50, 40, depending on what you do. You get more grants, you get better teachers. You know, there's kind of a picture here for what the future. And I'm asking. As a UWF parent, I'm conflicted. I love what UWF is. I can see the value of trying to grow it into something that is different. I mean, at some point, somebody decided that UCF wasn't going to be small, you know, right? And it's not small anymore. UWF has land. UWF has a lot of things about it that feel small in good and bad ways. And, you know, he's like, I'm out there talking with the student leaders. I'm out there talking with the Greek leaders. I'm trying to get people motivated to do more, to be more involved, to, you know, more of the on-campus kind of stuff as opposed to being a commuter school, all of it. Anyway, so this was back in December when they were having this was after they cut from, what is it, 80, 70, I forget how many people were in the application list. And then Zach Smith managed to oversee that process and cut to one. I still believe that was a violation of the Board of Governors rules about university president selections. No knock on Manny, just the process how we got here was terrible. And so they cut to one, and they had this conversation with the members of the public and with members of the board and faculty. And this is kind of the flavor of how that conversation went in December. And then yesterday they had the final vote on approving him. And they voted with one objection. I'll tell you about that a little bit later, like why she objected. She objected for the same reasons I did just now, which is no problem with Manny. Particularly, she hated the process. So she was really voting against Zach Smith, which I thought was a perfectly appropriate thing for her to do. But they overwhelmingly approved him. So he now goes to the Board of Governors in a couple of weeks, and they will, I would think, almost certainly approve him at that point, and then he'll be the actual president. So early congratulations for Manny Diaz. And I'll be honest, in listening to the conversation, I am much more comfortable with him as president than I had been before. I had been comfortable enough before. I'm more comfortable now based on the things that he wants to do. And I do think his skill set and strength and his wide range of experience in, you know, in politics, essentially, is going to come in handy. And seeing all these schools as the, you know, the head of the education department in Florida, he's got a lot of experience of seeing what other schools are doing and knowing what those schools are doing and how we might be able to be competitive with them. So we're here. It's almost, as I said, I thought it was going to be a unanimous vote. Turns out to be one dissent yesterday. 525 on News Radio 92.3. Very, very foggy this morning. I mean, really, you're driving through clouds again, so lights on. Hazards are allowed in Florida. If you're driving too slow, do not use your brights. Be safe out there. I'm Andrew McKay.
Welcome back to Winter Hack Radio, the place for clever hacks to survive the season. Icy driveway? Well, try spreading sand or bird seed to help with traction. Snowy puppy paws? Well, grab a whisk, brush it off, done. Catch COVID-19? Well, just get...
Actually, there's no hack for COVID-19. But if you test positive, prescription medications for COVID exist. Ask your doctor if they're right for you. Visit PfizerForAll.com to learn more. Sponsored by Pfizer.
Are you 50 or older? This news is for you. The CDC recommends you get vaccinated against pneumococcal pneumonia. Even if you're healthy, your age puts you at risk. People 50 or older are over 6 times more likely to be hospitalized with pneumococcal pneumonia compared to adults 18 to 49. Just one shot can help protect you. Learn more and schedule at VaxAssist.com. That's VaxAssist.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
All of your local news and talk from dependable host Andrew McKay on your morning drive with Pensacola Morning News 5 to 9 on News Radio 92.3.
What you talking about, Willis?
So, PJ, as I was talking about UWF, you had one kid go there at least for a little while. Do you have a thought about, do you like the idea of UWF growing and being more selective, or do you like it being what, I mean, it's a different picture for UWF, right?
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah. My child enjoyed it while she was there. She ended up transferring to PSC. But yeah, it's a great school, and I think growth is an option for it.
It's an option. I'm on the fence, frankly, about whether this is the right vision for UWF or not. And I'd love to hear from those of you who went there or have kids who went there. I mean, I, you know, had 2 kids who went there, so I have an opinion, but I don't have a strong opinion. I'd hate to see it not be available as the option for stay at home after community college, if you do go to PSC first, which is a great pipeline to do, I would hate to see it lost as the opportunity for basically anybody who wants to go to a university locally to go to it. And I do feel like that would be lost to some degree. And that's the one thing that concerns me. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, Andrew. At least 2 major American cities now on edge following high-profile incidents involving federal agents. Protests, of course, have not stopped in Minneapolis since Wednesday's shooting of a 37-year-old woman by an ICE agent. The feds say that the victim was attempting to hit the agent with her vehicle. Then last night in Portland, Oregon, Homeland Security says agents were attempting a traffic stop on an alleged Venezuelan gang member when the driver tried to run over an agent and shots were fired there. 2 people were sent to the hospital in that incident. The monthly jobs report is set to release later this morning. Most analysts expect about 73,000 new jobs added back in December. That would be an increase of around 10,000 from the month before. And the report today is expected to be the first that's free from data distortions that were caused by the government shutdown last year. And the IRS says that they'll start accepting tax returns on January 26th this year. Federal returns for 2025 need to be filed, of course, by April 15th.
All right. Thanks so much, David. 529 on News Radio 92.3. If you're 64, turning 65, or if you're retiring, or if you just have questions about Medicare, which is understandable, especially if you're in the age where, you know, that's kind of an option for you, or early on, you're just trying to plan for it. give Ricky Stewart a call. She's a good friend of mine. I've known her for the whole 12 years that we have lived here. Her whole family does insurance. She does this kind of this one part of it, helps people with Medicare. So you're wondering, you know, what does that mean for you for Advantage, if you've heard that term, or for supplement, if you've heard that term, or, you know, for prescription drug coverage, or what kind of are your options, and, you know, does Medicaid apply to you or not? And you just want to understand, she helps with that. And not just when you sign up, not just at open enrollment, but anytime during the year, she's a real person you can call. Boy, in the world of AI, she's a real person that you can call, and she's wonderful. 341-2185, or look her up online, insuredbyricky.com for Ricky Stewart Insurance. Boy, I'll tell you, I had this this experience yesterday. I was calling to schedule an oil change for the car, and I'm a call person because, you know, I'm old and capable, so I like to call to talk to a person, and I got the AI for scheduling. And I didn't wind up throwing my phone into the wall, but that was the desire. I hated every second of it. And eventually I just got so fed up, I ended the phone call, and my wife's like, why don't you just book online? I went online, and the booking online was much easier. It actually got me in the same day, and it was simple. But I don't understand the AI thing, because I would think the people who want a person are going to be the most unhappy with the AI as a receptionist.
Fox News. I'm CJ Papa. Customs and Border Patrol agents shoot two people in Portland, Oregon, sparking protests. Homeland Security says two people inside the car tried to run the agents over, adding the pair are connected to the Tren de Aragua gang. Their conditions not known at this time. President Trump sitting down exclusively with Fox's Sean Hannity discussing the next steps to fix the oil industry in Venezuela.
The top 14 companies are coming here. They're going to go in. They're going to rebuild the whole oil infrastructure. They're going to spend at least $100 billion.
That meeting is today at the White House. Court date for Luigi Mangione, the accused assassin of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson. This time in federal court, his lawyers are looking to express some evidence and have the death penalty punishment removed from the case. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. 68 right now. We've got a foggy start to our morning. We'll get a full check on our forecast with meteorologist Brooke Richardson and Channel 3 here in just a few minutes. A British company is coming to America. They'll be headquartered right here in Escambia County. The county commission yesterday agreeing to offer a 10-year tax exemption for an aerospace company called Field International Group. The company plans to invest $8 million and add 50 jobs at an annual salary of around $80,000. A company official says the county offers a strategic location, pro-business climate, corporate assets, and a skilled workforce. A 50-year-old Pensacola man crashed into two trees while attempting to pass a vehicle on East Quintet Road yesterday. That man was driving a pickup truck, ran off the road, traveled over a guardrail, and he and his 51-year-old female passenger had to be extracted from the truck. Both were taken to the hospital with serious injuries. FHP says that crash is still under investigation. The University of West Florida Board of Trustees voting yesterday to officially select Manny Diaz as the university's next president. Diaz served as the interim president for more than 6 months, was the only finalist considered for the permanent job. His approval carries an annual salary of $674,000 plus nearly $300,000 in benefits. It is pending approval by the Board of Governors. Board Chair Rebecca Matthews said Diaz hit the ground running from day one. Faculty Senate President Dr. Heather Riddell cast the lone dissenting vote, citing concerns about the selection process with only one finalist from 84 applicants. Now, police in Foley arrested a Robertsdale man after finding him in possession of about 11 ounces of liquid methamphetamine Tuesday. Police say officers made contact with 30-year-old Louis Joseph Jackson Tuesday during a traffic stop. Jackson was charged with drug trafficking and tampering with physical evidence after reportedly attempting to conceal that contraband. He's been booked into the Baldwin County Jail on a $750,000 bond. An Escambia County man locked up following an arrest in Santa Rosa County. Deputies arrested 48-year-old Quincy Jarrell Hollins just about 1 o'clock Thursday morning. He's charged with domestic violence attempted homicide for shooting at a woman in her vehicle outside of a McDonald's on Mobile Highway. The woman was not hurt. Hollins is being held without bond. Well, some Florida residents standing in solidarity with Minneapolis yesterday. That's what one woman said, at least, at an anti-ICE rally that she helped to organize in Tampa. She was part of the Tampa Immigrant Rights Committee. There were about 50 people gathered to protest. That's after a woman in Minneapolis was killed by an ICE agent on Wednesday. It's 534 News Radio 92.3, and let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
We are going to be looking at temperatures staying warm as you go through your day today. Touch of some fog this morning. High near 75 degrees this afternoon. 20% chance of a shower or thunderstorm. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 67. Heading into Saturday, 80% chance of showers and thunderstorms. High near 75. Going into Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 48. For Sunday, partly cloudy skies. High near 57. And Sunday night, temperatures dropping near 36. Stay connected. Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV Weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Yeah, thank you very much, Brooke. And right now we've got 68 degrees and some fog this morning. Our next news at 6 o'clock. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Minimax shares have doubled in its Hong Kong debut, beating rival Zipu AI's first day gains. The IPO highlights China's race to fund homegrown AI firms despite U.S. curbs on advanced chips. Rapid user growth contrasts with deep losses as the startup pushes to commercialize its models. NASA said it will bring Crew 11 astronauts back from the International Space Station on Saturday, weeks earlier than previously planned. A medical situation with an unnamed crew member caused NASA to make the change. NASA Administrator Jarek Isaacman said the astronauts' condition is now considered stable. Intel shares rose 2% in extended trading after President Trump posted a flattering message on social media about the chipmaker and its CEO and championed the government's investment in the company. In August, the U.S. government took a 10% stake in Intel through an $8.9 billion investment. Futures are slightly higher. On Thursday, the Dow Industrials gained 270, the NASDAQ down 104. That's Your Money Now.
Calling all nonprofits. If you serve Escambia or Santa Rosa County and could benefit from a grant of $100,000, Impact 100 invites you to a Link and Learn workshop on January 27. I'm Martha Holden, president of Impact 100 Pensacola, and we've awarded over $18 million to organizations right here. To register for this free workshop and learn more about grants, check us out on Facebook or visit Impact100Pensacola.org. That's Impact100Pensacola.org.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us today at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Hey, Pensacola, get ready for a midday delight that'll have you hooked. Weekdays from 11 until 2 on News Radio Pensacola. Tune in to the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show. Jamie Markley, David Van Camp, and Scott Robbins are their dynamic trio that'll keep you entertained, informed, and laughing out loud during your lunch break. They dish out the hottest topics, bring you the latest news, and deliver their unique blend of humor and insight that'll have you coming back for more. It's the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show on News Radio Pensacola. 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Joining us now, we have Mike Wood. He is the Public Information Officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Joins us every Thursday at this time. Mike, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning. So we had a resolution in the attacks on those two elderly gentlemen in the parking garage downtown from, what, 2 weeks ago or so?
Yeah, back in December, I believe it was December the 8th. And I got to credit, this is too, some good detective work on this that solved it. And they had video to put the icing on the cake to make sure they had the right person. But he was arrested and charged accordingly. And this was a senseless crime. These two gentlemen had, I mean, they did absolutely nothing wrong. and were beaten pretty bad by this guy. So fortunately, they're going to be okay, and he is behind bars where he belongs.
And this is, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is drunk guy leaning up against somebody's car, got told to get off, and that's what led to it all. And then the friend saw the bad thing happening and tried to thwart, intervene, and got hit too, right? Like, that's basically what happened. It's just ordinary citizens doing ordinary things.
Yeah, this gentleman in his 70s was walking to his vehicle in the parking garage and noticed a man leaning up against it. He didn't know if there was someone else in there, and the man was a lookout. He didn't know if the man was trying to get in. He didn't know anything. So he just walked up to him and said, hey, that's my car, you know, if you don't mind, and it went downhill from there. Mm-hmm. The suspect took exception to being questioned and pushed the gentleman a couple of times until he fell on the sidewalk and hit his head. The second a man in his 70s who was a friend of the first one saw what was happening, got on the phone to 911. The suspect left the parking garage. The second man followed him, and the suspect turned around and started hitting him in the face as well with his closed fist.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we caught him. That's the one good thing. So good police work on that. He had a pretty significant crash on Three Mile Bridge that involved some racing.
Yeah, this was Monday night. Officers responded to the Gregory Street exit from the bridge for a crash with injuries. One vehicle, the driver had to be taken from the vehicle, had to be rescued from the vehicle, and the second vehicle caught fire. But both drivers sustained non-life-threatening injuries. So prior to that incident, the Gulf Breeze Police Department observed the two involved vehicles along with a third motorcycle traveling at a high rate of speed across the bridge, and I believe one of them was clocked at 133 miles an hour. So Gulf Breeze is going to pursue that part of it, I'm sure, with super speeder warrants or citations.
133 miles an hour? My God. Wow. Okay. So, not to point the obvious, but I don't think you catch them until they have to slow down. You know, that's ridiculously fast and dangerous. Okay. We also had an incident at the Family Dollar on Cervantes. Is that right?
Yeah, that was Tuesday night, I believe, or over early Wednesday morning. Someone cut the power to the business. They sawed their way into the front door or through the front door, and then they got to the safe, and they were able to use a saw or some other power to get into it, which is indicates to us that this was not just a normal burglary. These were professionals that knew what they were doing. And we've seen this sort of thing before. People will come in from out of town, hit a store or two, and then be gone. So sometimes they're very difficult crimes to solve. And then other times they are already on the radar of some other department, and we can attach them to that case. But at this point, it's still under investigation.
So it's a kind of a low-level crime in the grand scheme of things compared to, you know, murder, kidnapping, that kind of stuff. So I would imagine it's a little bit less high-profile, fewer resources for these sort of interstate, if it is an interstate kind of activity. But how do you deal with that if you think that's what it might be? Is there much of a, is there much of a resource for finding information out about similar crimes in other places?
Yeah, law enforcement agencies all over the country, that we talk to each other. And you know, with the internet, it's not a difficult thing to do. We post crimes and different motives or ways that they pulled this off. The way they got in, what they did before they got in, what they went after, things like that. And with these cases have things in common, then they are flagged together and sometimes investigated together to see if they're connected.
Okay. All right. So it is the kind of thing that you can work on together. Mike, we had an incident take place in Alabama in Mobile it's the worst kind of thing you can imagine from a police perspective. You had this couple, Justin Senya and Ariel Perot. They basically lured cops into their property and then opened fire on him and shot more than 50 times. One of those officers, Lieutenant Lorenzo Matthews, was struck in his abdomen and rushed to University Hospital. Two other police officers crashed while they were getting to the scene. Of course, responding to these things is a very difficult thing. Motive here is a mystery. You know, why did they do this? They had no criminal record. They had no mental illness or drug abuse, but they decided that they were going to try to kill some cops. I know you guys know about this. I know you're, you know, keeping him in your prayers, but, you know, you tell me, how do you comment? How do you handle stuff like this? Always the fear that an ordinary call is, in fact, something entirely different.
Well, unfortunately, we've seen this before, and there's not a lot we can do. Every call that we go on, we use caution because we never know what could happen. That's why you always see two officers on a traffic stop. People wonder, why did they have two officers when I just ran a stop sign? And that's why we don't know what to expect. And it's even worse when you're going to someone's home. They know. They have a plan. They know what they're going to do. They know that the police are coming. So they are far ahead of us in the intelligence part of it. They know exactly what's going on, and we don't. So we respond and we try our best to be careful. And then once things go bad, then we have to deal with it. But unfortunately, this is something that we've seen before.
Yeah, it really is unfortunate. Switching gears just a little bit. We had yesterday we had our frivolous conversation, and in the topic we were talking about, you know, do you change in your car? And apparently everybody who's an ordinary human doesn't, but Meg and John do not. But then John asked a question, which I thought was a good question. I didn't know the answer to the question. You know, if in fact you change in your car, this is inside your personal vehicle, parked presumably, if you change entirely, as in if you're naked inside your car, it's not necessarily the more common thing, but if it is that indecent exposure? What is the law on something like that? Neither of us knew, and so I figured I'd ask you.
Well, it could be. If it depends on who sees. If somebody walks up, a mother with a child or walking through a parking lot and look in the window and see something like that, then charges could be coming for that. But if someone is making an attempt, they're changing under a blanket or something like that, then probably not. So every situation will have to be looked at in its entirety to see if charges are warranted in that situation. But just because you're in your car doesn't mean that you can do anything you want as far as taking clothes off and changing clothes and things like that. It's just it's a situation we would have to look at all the elements of what happened.
Okay, so you could catch a public indecency. You could catch a lewd and lascivious. There's a lot of things that could happen. Or it could be something where the police officer's like, yeah, this is no big deal. But a lot of it's going to depend on the event, the circumstances, who saw, and all that. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair to say. I mean, we've had it before where people were obviously doing that on purpose, and the first thing they're going to say is that they were just changing clothes, and, you know, we've heard that before. But somebody legitimately do it, you can tell the difference when you get there and you look at all the facts.
Look. That woman and I were just changing clothes for like 30 minutes. That's all that was.
So. Well, most of the time they're saying they were just talking, but whatever.
Very, very involved talking. All right, fair enough. We always like to end with a cop myth or a did you know. You know, Mayor Reeves, I mean, he put a little shade on me yesterday because I prefaced a little bit of a screwball-y question with him by saying it's a little bit. And he said, no, Andrew, you don't need to say that. They all are.
I heard that. That was a good answer.
Actually, speaking of that, I do have a quick question because I had proposed to him, what about the prospect of making Palafox an open container zone, maybe at night? You know, now that it's a pedestrian-only zone for the next several months, would there be a value in that and having events, bringing people downtown, you know, more partying, okay, which I know can create problems for you, but it also creates business for the bars and the restaurants and so forth. Is that something that you guys have thought about, considered? Does it create more problems when we have, like, the gallery night and there's lots of people and open containers allowed?
No, usually not. And that's something, again, we're going to go with the flow. If the ordinance changes or rules change, then we're going to go with that. That's what we do. We don't make the rules. We don't make the ordinances or the laws, but we'll go with it. But historically, the open container itself isn't an issue. I mean, if somebody's going to drink and turn into somebody that's not as smart as they should be, they make themselves known very quickly, and then we deal with it. But most of the time, people have the open container out there. They're not causing any issues during gallery night and other events, and it's just something that is not a problem for us.
Fair enough. Oh, you know what? You and I usually talk with my guests before we come on the air, and we kind of talk about what we're going to talk about, and I did not ask you if you had an opinion about this, so feel free to completely pass on the question, but I don't know if you watched the ICE video in Minneapolis with the woman and you know, the ICE agent. If you had an opinion, saw anything that you wanted to point out or observe, if not, totally fine, but if you wanted to comment, I want to give you a chance to.
Yeah, I'm not going to Monday morning quarterback another agency. That's something that I just don't do professionally do. Everybody has their own opinions, and I keep mine off the air and to myself. But officers, when they feel like that their life is in danger or someone else's, then they have the right to defend themselves. And that's as far as I probably need to take that.
Fair enough. And certainly if you're being given instructions by a law enforcement officer, if you obey first, a lot fewer bad things happen long term, right?
Yeah, we can pretty much guarantee 100% if everybody has done exactly what they're told by law enforcement, nobody will ever get hurt 100% of the time. That's pretty much a guarantee.
Last thing, we always like to talk about a cop myth or a did you know. Do you have one for us today?
Yeah, and it's a did you know that all PPD officers that are in uniform, and this goes for a lot of probably most law enforcement agencies, they are required to carry at least two less lethal weapons. In other words, they don't just have the gun, their sidearm on. So most of them will have a can of pepper spray and a taser, or a taser and a collapsible baton, or a pepper spray and a collapsible baton and no taser. So they have to have two ways of using a force that's less lethal, so they don't just have their firearm to rely on.
But I would assume most of them have probably all three, don't they? And maybe even other things?
Yeah, they can have all three.
Okay.
But, you know, sometimes things get out of control very quickly, and officers have to go straight to their firearm. But most of the time, they'll use a less lethal weapon, and things are settled down at that point.
But to this point, a PPD does not standard issue thing. They don't no boomerang though, right? You don't use the boomerang.
I guess not, because I'm not sure what that is.
No, I mean, like, they use in Australia, you know, to catch the Joeys or whatever. I mean,
no. So, yeah, I mean, we have to have backups for backups, because, you know, if you use pepper spray on somebody that's got a lot of narcotics in them, you know, they'll take that can of pepper spray and put it on their chili and enjoy it. I mean, there's some things that are not going to be effective and other things that will be. So
put it on their chili.
We have to be ready for everything. And offer you a bite. I mean, they just sometimes that stuff doesn't work, and there's been times when the taser just doesn't work because of drugs that people are on. So you have to be able to go to something else very quickly.
I just want to point out that I asked Mike the most off the wall question you could imagine, and he's just right back on track. Total professional. Well done, Mike. Way to handle my my screwball questions. I appreciate you, brother.
Well, I've been talking to you long enough that I'm pretty much ready for anything.
I love that.
Try to be anyway.
Put it on your chili. Now you got me thinking about chili and pepper spray enhancements. All right. Mike Wood is the Public Information Officer for the Pensacola Police Department. As always, sir, thank you for the time. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you, sir.
I do not think that spraying pepper spray on my chili would be a good way to season it, because the cloud of spray would be everywhere. But there is a part of me that's just a little bit tempted because I do like seasoning my chilies more spicy. 551 on News Radio 92.3. It's foggy. Be careful when you're driving. You're driving through clouds. So lights on, headlights on, brights off, hazards on if you have to go slow. It is legal in Florida now. I'm Andrew McKay.
You know those big banks where you're just an account number, where customer service is a chatbot, and hold music is your least favorite song? Yeah, we're not that. We're Penair Credit Union. Local, member-owned, and actually built to work for you. With better rates, few if any fees, and service from people who know you by name. So why bank big when you can bank better? Visit penair.org to learn more. Federally insured by NCUA.
You know what you want to do in retirement, but do you know how to get there? Tune in to What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair of Swan Capital, Saturdays at 1 to get answers to your retirement planning questions. Plan today so you can do all the things you've dreamt about doing in retirement. Don't miss What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair, Saturdays at 1. Firm offers insurance services. Advisory services offered through Swan Capital, LLC.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. Sunday afternoon, the American Red Cross is offering adult and pediatric CPR classes. Upon completion, participants receive a 2-year certification meeting national requirements. See redcross.org for more. Each January, the Quayside Art Gallery showcases artists who joined the gallery in the previous year. Check out the local talent all month long at the gallery on Zaragoza Street. See quaysidegallery.com for more info. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
News Radio 92.3 gets you live programming every day from 5 a.m. until 7 p.m. on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Last day. Capricorn 15s. Year of the city,
2274. Carousel begins.
Second and three after the penalty. Lacy up the middle. He won. Lacy's in the clear. It's a foot race. The Hurricanes cannot run him down. A lightning strike for Ole Miss. 73 yards.
73 yards. Electric play puts Ole Miss on top early against Miami last night. 7-3 after, of course, Miami had scored first with a field goal. But then Miami came back with their own touchdown.
Here's one of those second downs and six. Beck feeling some late pressure. Launching downfield. Wide open is Marion. Another bust. Then Miami back on top. 52 yards.
52-yard pass from Carson Beck to Keelan Marion. And that put them up by, I think that tied the game at 10-10. Then at the end of the second quarter, after there had been they were up 17 at this point, 17-10, and 58 yards out for Carnero, the kicker for Ole Miss.
Officially, this is a 58-yarder. Carnero steps into it and drives it right through. Are you kidding me?
58 yards.
This guy is.
In college. And he had a doink, and then he had a doink that went in, and they had a missed field goal for Miami into the fourth quarter. Third quarter is pretty boring, but into the fourth quarter, tight game, Ole Miss, Miami. Miami's got the ball.
Fletcher out as Tony comes in motion. They get it to him. Tony has space. Malachi, Tony, still running. Touchdown, Miami. Electric.
Right through several tackles. That put them up 24-19, so they're up by 5. 3 minutes to go. Ole Miss.
Again, the Canes bring pressure. Chambliss delivers. Touchdown, Ole Miss. Daquan Wright. The Rebels back on top.
And they went for 2, so that put them up by 3. 27-24 with 3 minutes to go. Miami drives the other direction. 18 seconds left in the game. Miami with the ball down by 3.
Three receivers bunch to the left. Beck is looking that way. And still looking, takes off running, Carson Beck with his legs, puts Miami on top. What a drive.
And that is not one you see very often. He scrambles into the end zone. So you thought it was kind of over, but Ole Miss, they get all the way down to the 35 of Miami. Time for one more play, 6 seconds to go.
Very different look on defense from before the timeout. You're
up,
right.
Down by 4.
Connects the snap. Backpedals, launches to the end zone.
Hail Mary.
Broken up.
Oh.
And the Miami Hurricanes head home to play for a championship.
Yeah, and you could have called defensive pass interference. You also could no call it. Even if they had called pass interference, you still would have had to go from the 20 and make another play and get the touchdown. So, yeah, Miami does win. Great game. Really good game. I hope tonight's game with Oregon and Indiana is equally as good. I know John, who is not here this morning, he traveled to go watch. I think he went to campus to go watch it, like at a bar on campus. And that's why he's like, I'm not going to be here tomorrow morning. Like, cool. I would too. I mean, that's a fun experience. Better for him if he had won, I'm sure. But condolences to Ole Miss fans. Congratulations to Hurricanes fans. And we'll watch the game tonight. Indiana versus Oregon should be a great one. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. At least two major American cities are on edge following a pair of high-profile incidents involving federal agents. Protests have not stopped in Minneapolis since the shooting of a 37-year-old woman by an ICE agent on Wednesday. And then last night in Portland, Oregon, Homeland Security says agents were attempting to perform a traffic stop on an alleged Venezuelan gang member. When the driver tried to run over an agent, shots were fired there. Two people were sent to the hospital. President Trump says he'll meet with Venezuela's opposition leader next week. President Trump talked to Fox News yesterday. He said Maria Corina Machado will be in the U.S. next week, and the president said he looks forward to talking with her. It'll be their first meeting since Nicolas Maduro was captured and brought to New York to face drug trafficking charges. And CES 2026 ends today. The Tech Expo, formerly called the Consumer Electronics Show, is held in Las Vegas each year, showcases the latest in tech. This year, the center stage was shared by a host of gadgets, including folding phones, housekeeping robots, plant-based batteries. self-driving cars, and many others.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. Yeah, there's always some weird, wild, interesting thing going on at that show. I didn't realize they'd changed the name. It's not the CES anymore. What's it called now?
Well, I think they just shortened it from Consumer
Electronics Show?
Yeah, Consumer Electronics Show to CES.
They've just gone with the acronym. I got you. Very good. All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 437-1620, top Navy Marine Corps leaders have actually toured Ingalls Shipbuilding here, and I think they were kind of, I've heard some reports that they were maybe in Pensacola, at least some of them were in Pensacola. You know, this is big hitters for the Navy and the Marine Corps. This is, you know, Admiral Phelan was involved in this. Secretary of the Navy was involved in this. They're here. Florida's a shipbuilding place. And as you heard Jay Collins at the American Magic thing mention, you know, Florida builds more ships than any other state in the union. And we're looking to grow that, to enhance that. And, you know, one way to figure out where to build more is to go look at the facilities, which apparently they're doing. So, this is part of the future. President Trump wants to invest in ships. John Phelan wants us to invest in ships. As it was said, there was a clip at the top of the hour that said, you can't be a superpower if you don't have a super Navy.
Local talk in the morning, 5 to 9 with Andrew McKay is on News Radio 92.3. WNRP Golf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.
Another shooting in another city leads to another outcry. I'm Dave.